the guys from Ping, they've kind of shown me how much the equipment matters.
I just love that I can hit any shot I kind of want.
We're going to be able to tell some fun stories about what goes on here to help golfers play better golf.
Welcome back to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast. I'm Shane Bacon, Marty Jurtson over there. And we got a great guest today, Juan Postigo, joining us. Plays DP World Tour. Is it EDGA or do you say EDGA? Which one do you go with?
Both of them.
Both of them
but
play?
I'd say EDGA is easier for
Spanish. How long have you been playing professional golf? How long have you been battling it out there?
I've been playing golf for my entire life, but professionally just 3 years now. And it's been a fun journey.
How's it gone? How different is pro golf from year one to now year three?
It's quite similar. I mean, I enjoy the game the same way I did when I was an amateur. I really love traveling. I really love do what I do. And so I haven't seen a lot of differences, just that my bank account sometimes just go up and down Squid Creek.
Well, Marty and I know that world very, very
well. But it's okay. It's okay.
At least you got the up part, you know, sometimes.
part of the pro golf. So you were born without much of your right leg. You started playing golf at the age of 12. I saw that when you were 14, you were a 30 handicap.
Yeah.
And you got down to a 4 handicap in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Did the bug bite you right away? Were you obsessed with golf right when you kind of found the game?
Like, I came really from a really sporty family. I think when I was born with my disability, my parents started me to sport pretty quick. I was a good swimmer, was a good skier. I was a pretty good sailor at that time. But my granddad just retired from work and he started playing golf. And so I was the only grandson that wanted to play with him. So that's why I got engaged with the game. And I really loved it. I think the opportunities that the game of golf gives you as a disabled are much bigger than any other sport, because when I was sailing, I had a different boat. When I was a swimmer, I couldn't make the same times as the other did. But now as a golfer, I play with the same equipment, the same golf clubs, the same golf ball, the same golf course, and I can beat anyone. So I think that's why the game of golf really, I got passionate about it.
Well, growing up in Spain, who are some of your the golfers that influenced you or that you kind of looked up to in your childhood and early on in your golf career?
We're a pretty small country. Golf is not very big sport. It's just soccer around there or tennis. But we have pretty good golf course. I think obviously Sergio Ballesteros has been the main inspiration around there. We're from the same town, so it's been great to have been close to him and his family. And Oli is also a big name, José María Lazábal. And then obviously Sergio García, John Rahm, many others that came through and that make the game much bigger in our country.
We hear so much about Seve as this inspiration for Spanish golfers and for European golfers.
Yeah.
I mean, being from his hometown, is it everywhere? I mean, do people know of him across the board? Is the kind of the legend of Seve in your hometown a big part of your town now?
Yeah, it is. It is. Seve obviously is a big name over there. Imagine like 40, 50 years ago when this man started playing majors and doing these kind of things. Golf was just a very small sport in the country, just for the richest people. He was a caddy, humble guy from humble beginnings, farmer family. And so the story he has, the way he did it, the way he showed us the younger that we are coming through, how it's been done, it's really passionate us and make us be more focused on our targets. And I think he's really big part of any European golfer, not Spanish, but European golfer.
Marty, it's so interesting, you know, as Americans, we don't run into this that often, but you think about somebody like Seve, takes up the game, becomes obviously a great player, starts to play well in major, starts to win major championships, and then 15, 20, 30 years later, you see this boom in golf from the area he's from or the country he's in. You think about somebody like Victor Hovland, right?
Yes,
and Victor Hovland, and coming from a country that hasn't had a whole bunch of great golfers from that area over the years. You think about what Victor Hovland's success could do to where he is from in 15 or 20 years as young players see them pop up. I mean, you know, the dream team in the NBA in 92, and how many great basketball players have now come from Europe. I mean, it is crazy to see that. How one person can have such an impact on an area.
Yeah, and I think Spain is, there's so much, all the players that come from Spain, the Spaniards, they have this passion about them. And at least from the outside looking in, that's what I think we've seen with you, Juan, and it's been fun for us at Ping to get to know you more and help support you with equipment, because you kind of bring that to the game and to the sport. Tell us about the last, tell us a little about what you think your the strengths of your game are and what your priorities are from a playing standpoint, competitive standpoint.
I think I'm pretty strong at every part of the game, but my coach doesn't say the same.
Gotta get a new coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Who is your coach right now?
My coach is a big name over there. It's Santiago Carriles. He's from the same era that Seve Ballesteros. He's now 65. He started cutting at the same time that Seve did, so they were pretty close friends. So that's my kind of coach, old school coach. We don't work too much with technologies. We don't like TrackMan. I mean, I use it at some points. I think it's necessary to know some data sometimes, but we are not based on that for the day work. But I think we work a lot on the short game. It's really important because obviously with my disability, sometimes I miss my balance on some longer shots. So I may probably miss two more greens that an average golfer, pro golfer per round. So I need to get up and down more usually. My driver is a big strength. Like when I changed to Ping 7 years ago, 8 years ago, it was a game changer to have Ping drivers on the back because they're really stable. And those miss hit I may have because of my balance, they keep the ball in the fairway and not that short. So I think that was a big change for me. And then from a ball striking perspective, I need to know very well how the ball is sitting. It's really important not to be really wet areas or windy, anything that can move me, it make it tougher.
Yeah, so short game. And in terms of your club head speed, we were talking a little bit. I've tried to swing on one leg. Okay. And I'm, Shane, I don't know what I swing my driver. It's probably around 80 miles an hour.
Oh, I mean, same. I mean, it's, I mean, the, what, you're up in the upward hundreds, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, very, very impressive.
Yeah, I'm around 105.
Yep.
My goal is to get to 110.
What are you doing to get to 110? Are you doing like speed training? How do you, are you, you working out in the gym? Like, how are you trying to get to 110?
I'm doing everything I can. I mean, I'm working hard on my strength, on my mobility. I'm working on everything. But I think I'm reaching some point that is getting tough to go up. There is a big player a few years ago. We were at the Open Championship in St. Andrews, and I was hitting balls in the range. And Bryson DeChambeau came in, and he, can I take you a video? Of course, Bryson, you can take me a video. But after that, I asked him, Bryson, what can I do to get some more miles? And he just said, no, it's very simple, very simple. You have to hit 100 drives every day as hard as you can, and your ball speed will increase pretty fast. And I say, Bryson, if I hit 100 drives on Monday, I won't be able to get up from bed until Thursday.
so, he like, didn't quite understand.
Yeah.
That's right.
But it was fun conversation.
You initially tried to play with a prosthetic, right? And then it just didn't make sense for you. So that's kind of the reason you switched to just swinging on one leg?
Well, basically, I played with my prosthetic my first 5 years playing the game. But at the age of 16, 17, I had an operation on my stump. So something went pretty wrong. So everything that touched my stump, I have like a nerve pain.
Mm.
So anything that touched this, obviously I can put my weight on a prosthetic, kills me. So that's why I had to decide of or stop playing the game or just keep with one leg. Was quite tough at the moment because I was like a two handicapper. I mean, I was a good player at that point. So starting playing from the beginning again, your mind knowing how well you could play, but your body couldn't do that movement was quite challenging at that point.
Juan, let's go. Let's talk about what's in your bag a little bit. So you got a 10K driver.
Yeah,
and you talked a lot about the forgiveness helping you, right? Yeah. What's the rest of your bag breakdown look like into your metal woods and then into your long irons?
Yeah, I play 10K just a few days ago. I thought the G430 was max was difficult to improve, but these guys did it again.
So, Marty's one of those guys.
Physics wins.
So I just put it straight in the bag after hitting three, four shots here. And then I've got a 5-1-3 boot, the Maxis. I've got my shaft a little bit shorter on those from a long time ago. I think Mike Lee, 7 years ago, told me to just to short those boots a little bit. And I have much better impact and I feel the club head much more stable through impact. And then last year, I make a main switch in the factory in Greensboro. I used to play a I-234 iron. But it was sometimes difficult to get the carry distance at some awkward spots. So we decided to build up a hybrid. I was anti-hybrid player. I mean, I didn't like hybrids at all. I thought it was going to go left and to do those kind of things. We've heard that before, right, Shane?
Yeah.
We talked about that on this podcast before.
Yeah, but the feeders over there just fitted pretty well. I mean, and the ball is just pretty good ball flight. And I find that with my three-quarter swing, I can make the distance I was making with my full fire before. So it was pretty good change. And from down there, I've got 5 fire and 2 pitching wedge, the I-230s. I've been playing the I-Series for a long time. And this is my second set of 5-230s, so it's pretty good. Very stable iron, very accurate with the distances, which I think it's key on the high level at least. I know exactly what the ball is going to do. And on the heel impact, it's amazingly, it doesn't lose any distance. I mean, maybe 2-3 yards, which is great because I hit off the heel often.
Mm.
So I know my ball is going to be in the green, just touch out the pin, so it's pretty good. And then I change... Few days ago, from the Glide Pro, I played Glide Pro for a while,
yeah,
which I loved them,
yeah,
50, 54, 58. And I changed the S159,
yep,
and they're pretty good, yeah, amazingly.
I noticed in your wedges you're using the H grind,
yeah,
right? So, what have you noticed with that? What do you like in your short game technique? What are some of the characteristics of how you use your 54 and 58 or your wedges around the green?
Yeah, look, with the Glide Pro, I found out that sometimes I like using my club face a little bit open all the time.
Yeah.
So I felt that sometimes with the old wedges, the bounce hit the ground before.
Too early.
So I went here and they told me, we've got what you need, the H grind.
Yeah.
I said, okay, give it to me. And it's like... A little bit, it's just not the bounce, it's just the grind, a little bit less bouncy. And I can feel like my face open on tight lies, and I know it's going to go through the ground perfectly. And so it's like a little game changer, to be fair. I mean, I tested 3 days ago, as I said to you, with your feeders, and it was great to see how the ball was coming low and spinny without interacting with the ground. So it was beautiful.
Beautiful. And you use that in the 54 and the 58.
Yeah,
so exactly. That H1 stands for half moon.
Yeah.
Right. So you get that little half moon crescent shape. So when you open the face.
Yeah, it's more flatter in the ground.
Yeah, instead the lead edge stays lower to the ground.
Yeah. So that's pretty, pretty good. Yeah.
Juan, what is it like being an inspiration for people? I know you travel around the world and, you know, you try to raise awareness for disabled golfers. What is it like when people reach out to you on social media or people ask you, how do you play golf or how did you get into golf?
Yeah.
What is it like being a role model, if you will, to so many people out there?
I mean, I wouldn't like to say role model because my mother wouldn't be agree with that. it is amazing. I mean, to see what can you generate just playing the game you love, it is something great. Because for me, I was more like this. It's something I've been doing all my life. I've used my crutches before than my wedges. So, I mean, it's something that I live with it and I don't know what's put into shoes. So, I mean, it's something... that I don't understand, but I see on people what you create on them, that feeling that I also can do it. And that's great to see. I was talking with Christine a few moments ago on how many messages we receive every week on social media. My son, you just lost one leg due cancer. He was a golfer. You think he will be able to keep going? Of course he will be able to keep going. Just go to the range, go to your hit pro and start building it, start doing it. And I think... the game of golf is the best platform to do it. And I think with brands like Ping that really are focused on make this game adaptive to anyone, I mean, you support too many other players that...
Yeah.
I mean, we've got golfers without arms. I mean, and we've got incredible engineers around here that are able to build a set of class for them. And I mean, I think I'm on the perfect spot to showcase what we are doing. And this partnership is going great because I think we will show many more people what the game of golf and what equipment is going to do in their lives.
Yeah, Shane, we had Dr. Paul Wood on who kind of helped kick off a bunch of our engineering work we've done. Juan talked about, you know, some of our paddle attachments we have for for golfers playing without arms. It's pretty incredible and very fun to watch. Very fun to play golf with you guys. I'm jealous of your swing personally.
Thank you.
If for those of you that haven't seen it, go Google Juan and check out how pure his golf swing is.
So you mentioned Seve is such an inspiration. Seve's son is your agent. How did that relationship come about?
Oh, this is a little bit of a crazy thing. I know Javier and Carmen and all, and Miguel, the family, for a long time. We're pretty good friends. We're almost the same age. He's a bit older than me, but we're good friends. We've played a lot of golf together. And Javier was playing professional golf. He decided not to play anymore 2-3 years ago. And so we started working together. He called me. I was playing in Dubai Finale 2 years ago. And he told me that he was interested in working with me. And I said, Javier, of course, I'd love to work with you. So I went back home and he called me to go to his house, his dad's house, big house on top of the town and beautiful in front of the golf course. And so we went to the hall and I was signing a deal with Javier on top of a table, of a glass table. And under there, it was all the, I don't know how you call them.
Those badges?
Things, the badges, Augusta badges, yep. The British Open badges, the PGA yep. Championship badges, the US Open badges.
Your goosebumps on goosebumps.
And I was like, what am I doing here? I think it was a crazy moment in my career. And obviously working with him, it's pretty good. He's Spanish. I'm Spanish. We get on well together. He's really interested, really, in my career. And he's a golf lover. So I think I'm in pretty good hands.
What's your schedule like? What's a year like for you? How many events are you playing? How often are you traveling? Yeah. Do you come stateside much and playing things over here? What does your year look like?
I travel around. Last year I traveled 25 weeks.
Okay.
I played probably 16 tournaments last year, and I had 8 or 9 weeks for sponsors or speeches or different kind of things. So I pretty travel much. My main schedule is based on DP World Tour. We play there 9 events, 10 events a year, so that's pretty busy. And then I play the major, with the US Open here in the US, the British Open in the UK, and Aussie Open as well in Australia. And then I try to play professional events in Spain, on the Alps Tour as well, on the Challenge Tour. So it's quite a busy schedule.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing 25, 30 events, is that fair to say? I mean, is that... Are you close to 25 at this point?
Yeah. This year, I hope. I mean, I shouldn't play that much. My doctors don't like me to do that often, but it's just you can't say no.
Right.
Why don't you? You want to come to Phoenix? Oh, we'll do it. Why not? I mean, you want to come to Japan? All right, we'll go to Japan. We'll make it. And then you end the year, you look back and say, oh, I took 120 planes this year. Oh, that's pretty busy.
I got status everywhere. I can fly any airline.
Yeah, I'm gold member everywhere.
Juan, Pia Nielsen and Lynn Marriott have been great. They're great friends of Ping, Ping ambassadors. I personally read their books when I was growing up, Vision 54. Very inspirational to me. Tell us a little bit about how they've inspired you and their work.
I think it's easy to know what they have done for the game. I read that book as well. I've got conversations with them. And I think the vision they have to make this game simpler than what it is really what the key on their book. I mean, you can make a hole in one every single hole. You can birdie every single hole. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
We are more focused on our misses than our targets. And that's... I'm a professional golfer and it still happens to me sometimes. So I really think the vision they've got, it's great for everyone, for amateurs, but for professionals is what makes us for a living. So it's pretty important.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Juan, tell us a little bit about what you're, especially maybe when you're traveling, you know, and playing tournaments, what does your practice routine look like? What percentage of your time do you work on driving, full swing, chipping, putting, and how do you kind of organize that?
Yeah, so when I'm home, I try to practice every day from Monday to Friday. I try to get the weekends off, but they're never off because I play 9 holes with friends or just
You
whatever.
Are obsessed.
Yeah.
You're a golf nut.
I'm a geek. I'm a geek.
Of course.
And so I wake up 7, go to the gym, make some warm-ups. It's really important for me to warm up before going off to the range because my body is quite stiff in the mornings. Mm-hmm. So I need to go to the gym to lose up a little bit. It's just half an hour, 40 minutes warm up. I go to the range. I usually hit 1 hour balls, 1 hour and a half short game practice, and then 45 minutes putting. And then I play 9 holes with the bag on my shoulders. Not the tour bag, just a motor bag, a hoofer bag. It would be crazy.
Tour bag will be 25.
Yeah, it was just too hard. And so after that, I get home by 2 p.m. I got lunch at that time, which is normal time in Spain. Here it's too late, but that's a Spanish time to have food.
I'm jealous of Spanish time.
Same. And then I have a little siesta, a little nap, which is, if you're a good Spanish, you have to do it. It's just a must, okay? It's just, you have to do it. And after that...
Yeah, real quick, hold on. Yeah. I need to ask a Spanish nap question. Yeah. How long is the nap? I mean, we've been having these nap conversations this week amongst the ping crew.
Yeah.
What's the time? Are you 45 minutes? Are you an hour?
Experts say that 20 minutes nap is the best.
Okay.
I think 20 minutes nap, it doesn't...
It's too short.
Yeah, it's too short.
Too short, okay.
So it's like 45 minutes.
45 is perfect.
It can get to an hour and 15, but shouldn't.
Okay. It shouldn't. I say if you get the 2 hours, that's just asleep, you know.
Now, Juan, do you set an alarm, or is it you just wake up after 45 minutes?
No, yes, Isabel, my girlfriend, she'll wake me up. Okay.
She's the alarm.
Yeah, she's the alarm.
So it's lunch, then nap,
and then I go to the gym 1 hour and 20 minutes, probably. I make strength Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And Tuesday and Thursday, I work cardio on bike. So that's my practice routine, basically.
One, with your left leg,
how
long can you stand on it, balance on it without a use of crutches? Can you do this for minutes on end?
Forever, yeah. I can do it for hours.
Really?
Yeah.
And then when you're reading putts, are you crouching down? Are you bending over? How do you handle reading putts?
I used to move much more than what I'm doing now. Usually I have to take care. I want to play golf forever, so right. I need to be really careful about my body. So my knee is in pretty good shape, but the less I move it, the better it's going to be in the future. So I've got a great caddy, which is doing all the reads on the line. We know each other for a long time, so I really trust on the lines he's seen from that view.
Gotcha.
So he's doing that job.
Have you been with your caddy for a while now?
Yeah, we know each other for 15 years now, and he's been on the back for almost 3 right now.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so it's pretty.
So you're developing a good. I think, Shane, that's one thing we talk about golf being a team sport. I think this is a great example of having that great relationship. Well,
the trust. I mean, trusting the read to the point where you know his eyes are basically your eyes. I mean, that's a hard thing to do as a golfer, right?
Exactly. And I need much more sometimes than a caddy. I need an assistant.
Yeah.
And some traveling. Logistics. I cannot carry my bags. I cannot carry my 60. And I can hit it to 60, but I cannot carry my bag, so it's pretty awkward. But we're traveling from the same place. He's coming with me. He's helping with all that logistics. So it's pretty helpful to have Jaime in the bag. And he's doing great in the course and obviously off the course, which is some work that sometimes we don't see, but they do.
Yeah. Juan, how did the relationship start with Ping? How did this come about?
Oh, this is... one of the best stories that happened to me in my life is just being on the perfect spot at the perfect time. So I was playing an event, an Edguy event in Portugal. I don't know the date, but maybe 7-8 years ago. And at that time, I was sponsored by another brand. And so there was a Ping tent on the range. And a feeder came to me. I didn't know who he was. I thought it was just a simple feeder. So he came to me. Would you like to test? It was the blue irons, the iBlue.
Yeah, the IE1 iron.
IE1. Okay, yes. IE1. So those irons. So I hit, I will test them. I hit the first shot and the feeder, Mike Lee, said to me, well, what do you think on that ball? And I said, 148. I said, 148. So I hit the second ball. I said, 152, 152. I hit the third ball. I hit like 10 balls. And I call off the yardage of those shots. So... Mike said to me, would you like me to send you the details of your feeding today? Oh, yeah. I gave him my email. I didn't know what was going on at that point. This guy was really kind with me, but I didn't know anything. So 5 days after that, I received an email from Mike Lea, a beautiful email that I've got around there, which is one of the most beautiful emails I've ever received in my life, saying that Ping wanted to support me. And if did I say yes, I will say yes to be part of a family and with all that that meant. So I said yes, and I become part of one of the, I've got a big family in my home. We're six brothers, but this is even a big family worldwide. And everywhere you go, you feel like you were with the same people, which is great. And so I have to say thanks to Mike. I still see him a lot in Europe, and it's great to what he did with me and the path he showed me to go.
You say you have six brothers?
Yeah,
there's six brothers involved. I mean, you said you come from an athletic family. Yeah. I know. I read your. I think your granddad was a sailor. I mean, a lot of these things involved. What is it like growing up with six brothers? I mean, I can only assume the household is extremely competitive.
You need to be so fast to get the food, you know?
I'm assuming not a lot of naps going on with six brothers. Yeah,
exactly. No, it was really fun. I mean, I think now it's even better because now we are, the smaller ones are 22, they're twins. So now we get on well, really well with each other. We all live in different places and we travel a lot to see each other. We have really good relationship between us. And I think we share a lot of memories from those beginnings. But it was crazy because maybe at home, every single afternoon after school, there were 15 chairs around. Two of my friends, two of my sister friends, two. I mean, it was like a kindergarten.
It was chaos
all the time.
Juan, are you a golfer that gets nervous when you're on TV, first hole, big putt to win a tournament? And how do you handle those situations?
If any golfer in the world answered this question saying that he's not getting nervous, he's a liar. Okay? He's a liar. I think we all get nervous, and nerves are good. Because when you are nervous, it means that what you're doing, it really matters for you. You really want to do it well. The problem with nerves is that if you reach a level of nerves that you cannot move your body the way you want, that's the problem you have to fix. But I've never had those situations. I really feel my mind and my body under control 90% of the situations. So I've worked with psychologists just to try to focus on the present a little bit more, because sometimes nerves come not to want to miss that shot. So your mind is in the future. You're not what you have to think to hit that shot, what you had to feel. So I've worked a lot in the past. So I think right now I'm really stable at that point.
Marty, how do you handle them? Like, how have you handled them in the past in terms of being nervous at a, you know, like we've talked about the 16th hole at Phoenix or playing a major championship. What's your process to handle nerves?
I remember I asked Christian Pena this question before I played my first major because I was starting to get like, oh man, I'm going to get very nervous.
Like, and great. He just like, said, thinking about it, yeah.
I remember Christian saying, breathe. And I was like, he was right. In hindsight, he was right.
Yeah.
So I do a lot with breathing, you know, try to do these diaphragmatic, like real relaxing breathing techniques. But I get very nervous on the first tee. After I hit that first tee shot,
good
I'm like, it's like popping the balloon.
I think
relaxed,
it is important on the first tee to have really a security shot.
Yes.
Like for me, I just tee it off low.
Same.
We've been talking about this.
Hit like a big cut, put it in play.
We're all in the same boat here.
I will never hit a driving iron from the first tee. Like I always hit a driver tee low and it's a big head. Difficult to miss it.
I always say that the worst is when you have to hit a fairway wood on the first tee.
100%.
It's like the worst thing. You know, I just want to hit driver. Just let me hit driver, please.
I'd rather take the driver from the shaft and hit it cut like that than hit it like a three wood.
Juan, you're taking us through kind of your routine on a day-to-day basis. I mean, it's robust. What do you do outside of golf for fun? Do you follow sports? What else do you do besides just being a golfer?
I really like spending time with my family.
Okay.
To be fair, I mean, my grandma is quite old right now, so I like being in the afternoon with her. I like going to the cinema. I stay a lot of time with my brothers and sisters. We just had a nephew, which is quite a good feeling. So I'm big family man, but a part of that, I really like music, cinema. I don't really like other sports.
Okay.
I like Formula One probably, because Alonso is again up there.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting for the Spanish, and Carlos Sainz as well, which is a great golfer, by the way, Carlos. And that I follow tennis whenever Alcaraz or Rafa is around.
Saw Alcaraz at the US Open last year. It was like a next level experience. See how fast he is in human form. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you see these pro golfers hit it in when you're not watching on TV, but you see it in person, and it's like a religious experience.
Yeah.
Watching Alcaraz play tennis was a religious experience.
Religious, right?
It's so crazy good.
Yeah, and I like following golf. I don't follow every single tournament, but I love watching the Masters, the British Open, the US Open, the Ryder Cup, which last time I think we won.
Hey, we'll check. We'll do some research, make sure that's right? The case.
But yeah, I'm quite a calm man, a part of my public life, let's say.
What are your goals kind of going forward in this sport? What are your golf goals as you look ahead, not just in 24, but beyond?
On an individual perspective, I like to win US Open. I think it's a big target on my schedule. Also the British Open, I think it's something really important to go through and to take back to Spain. And from a collective point of view, I think it's important to get this game through more people. I think we need to have a bigger stage, even that what we have right now. And I think we will get it. People is loving what they are watching. I think it's amazing. It's an amazing product to watch a small guy playing against me, playing against one arm and shooting under par every single day. I mean, I think it's something crazy to see as a golf fan. And I think we can really inspire so many people around the globe. I think in Europe, like 60% of the population has a disability. So that's a lot of people in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine how many people could play golf at the same level as we are doing and make a living from that. So we're just kind of making a platform so many more players can come into the game. I think that's a really good goal that I'd talk a lot with Brendan Lawlor, which is world number two, with Keith Popper, which is now world number one. We just need to create this all together to have more people into the game.
One, there's, I'm thinking about one more club in your bag that we didn't get to is your putter.
Yeah.
So answer D, a little deeper face. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your connection, how you got fit and what attracted you to that model.
Well, this is in my life. There's good stories around. So I was in the British Master last year. I have been playing the Oslo putter for a long time. I placed the Oslo Bolt,
mm-hmm.
like from 2016, something like that. And then I changed 2 years ago to the Oslo PLD, which is a bit smaller head, the black one. And so I went to the British Masters, and the first day, oh man, I think I shoot 42 putts in that round. It's not a problem with the putter, but my mind was going away. So I jump into the track and I said, "Dom, mate, I need a putter." And he said, "Go to the queue."
You're not the only one.
You're not the only one. So one of your fitters here in America was there in the UK that week. I don't remember the name, sorry for that. But he came with me to the putting green. I think Phil Kenyon was around there as well. And we figured out that we need to change what was going on down there. So we changed drastically everything. I was playing 33 inches. We now play 34. I was playing mallet. Now I'm playing more bladed putter. I was playing a thick grip. Now I'm playing a regular grip. So we're trying to change everything. And it's working pretty well with my swing because I'm really straightforward. So that kind of head shape, I think, is going great with that. So I'm really happy with that at the moment.
Yeah.
Juan, when you come to the United States, what are you the most excited about? Is it some food option? When you come stateside, what do you look forward to? Are you like a Chipotle guy? Like, what do you do?
Oh, sorry?
You might not even know it. Chipotle's a restaurant. I'm just wondering if there's something here you come and you're like, I'm into this.
I mean, I'm coming from Spain, so the food in Spain, it's just a little bit of a bigger level.
Yes.
I like coming to Cheesecake Factory or doing those kind of things once a year, which is great. I love that, eating pancakes and I like that. But, you know, I love how you are passionate for the sport. I really like watching that. Like, you really give a lot of value to athletes. And I think to any kind of athlete, it doesn't care if he's playing volleyball or playing golf or playing football or whatever, but you love that and you give us a perspective much higher than what we have in Europe, which is something I think that's the really, and obviously, hiring a big car. I love driving big cars.
Like, man, I'm gonna get the big SUV.
Yeah, like my girlfriend couldn't jump into the car. She's 5 feet. She's quite small, so I almost have to jump it in the car. I just get the biggest one.
That is very American.
Yeah. It is very different, Shane. You know, you've lived over there. Going to Europe and renting a car on a golf trip, it's like Tetris getting your bags.
I mean, in Scotland last year, I had to take the rental back. As I was like, I can't do it. I'll just Uber. It's fine. This isn't going to work for me. It was like Northern Scotland. I was out. But yeah, that's so funny about the SUVs. Yeah. It's such a true thing. Juan, we really appreciate the time. I mean,
Thank you very much. Great story.
Love watching you swing. Love watching you play. And yeah, just appreciate you spending some time with us on the Pink Proving Grounds podcast.
Thank you very much. My first time here. I'm hopefully not the last.
Okay? Yeah, absolutely. We'll have you back on.
Thank you.
This is the Pink Proving Grounds podcast.